Hello, it's Yannick from the future. AI is moving crazy fast right now, like crazy. So the news of this week is like old news, but I'm still gonna show to you. Google I.O. just recently happened. The gist of it is they're gonna stick generative AI into just about everything. And also Anthropic upgrades the Claude API to have 100,000 tokens context. No one knows so far how they're doing it, but it's happening. 100,000 tokens context. Insane. All right, enjoy the news.
Yay. Jeff Hinton leaves Google and tells the world about the dangers of AI. OpenAI loses $500 million, and Google has no moat. Welcome to ML News. Hello everyone, welcome to ML News. Let's dive right in, lots of stuff happening. This is Snapchat AI. Do you have access to my location? No, I don't have access to your location. Where am I? I'm sorry, but I don't have access to your location information. Okay, are you lying? No, I'm not lying. I don't have access to your location information. Where's the closest McDonald's? Yeah, there's a McDonald's very close to you. It's located right on Yonge Street in Tonawanda. Make of that as you will. Jeff Hinton leaves Google and warns of a danger ahead. This is a story from the New York Times. Jeff Hinton, obviously pioneer in the field of deep learning, very, very early contributor of many of the currently still used techniques, also one of the originators of AlexNet, has left his long-held job at Google and is now essentially saying that these technologies are dangerous and we should pay attention or stop or just be very careful of what we do. The article says, a part of him, he said, now regrets his life's work. I console myself with the normal excuse, if I hadn't done it, somebody else would have, Dr. Hinton said during a lengthy interview last week in the dining room of his home in Toronto. It's hard to see how you can prevent the bad actors from using it for bad things, Dr. Hinton says. He says, look at how it was 5 years ago and how it is now, he said of AI technology. Take the difference and propagate it forwards. That's scary. Until last year, he said, Google acted as a proper steward for the technology, careful not to release something that might cause harm. But now that Microsoft has augmented its Bing search engine with a chatbot challenging Google's core business, Google is racing to deploy the same kind of technology. The tech giants are locked in a competition that might be impossible to stop, Dr. Hinton said. His immediate concern is that the internet will be flooded with false photos, videos, and text, and the average person will not be able to know what is true anymore. He also worried that AI technologies will in time append the job market. Today, chatbots like ChatGPT tend to complement human workers, but they could replace paralegals, personal assistants, translators, and others who handle rote tasks. It takes away the drudge work, he said. It might take away more than that. Down the road, he is worried that future versions of the technology pose a threat to humanity because they often learn unexpected behavior from the vast amounts of data they analyze. This becomes an issue, he said, as individuals and companies allow AI systems not only to generate their own computer code, but actually run that code on their own. And he fears a day when truly autonomous weapons, those killer robots, become reality. The idea that this stuff could actually get smarter than people, a few people believe that, he said. But most people thought it was way off, and I thought it was way off. I thought it was 30 to 50 years or even longer away. Obviously, I no longer think that. Okay, there's obviously a lot being said right here, and Jeff Hinton is certainly a credible and notable voice to listen to when it comes to these things. But a lot of people also disagree with him, especially as he sounds more and more like a foamer, for example, saying we're all in the same boat with respect to the existential threat, so we all ought to be able to cooperate on trying to stop it. And more. Jan LeCun, on the other hand, says AI hype is ridiculous in all directions, as in LLM have superhuman intelligence, are useless parrots, hallucinations will destroy society, scaling is all you need, deep learning has hit a wall, AI doesn't exist and never will, or AI is going to kill us all. I think among the various opinions, you can probably find some common ground, but I also tend to be more on the side of LeCun here than of Hinton. I don't think this is that much of an existential threat by itself. Certainly my biggest fear of this technology is what happens when it is concentrated in just a small amount of people, like large companies and governments, and what then happens if people with not so good intentions come to power in these places. I think that's why the push to do open source and to really democratize this technology is so important, that exactly that doesn't happen. The fact that the internet's going to be flooded with texts that you don't know is true or not, or photos or videos, I mean, that's already the situation. Who cares if you can generate like 10,000 fake news articles? The problem is distribution. The problem isn't generation. I can generate something fake text right now. Whatever, let's go. Okay. Pineapple. You remember? I meant to write ananas. Do you know the amount of time it took me to find out that ananas, which is the German word for pineapple, isn't an English word? Because it sounds so English. Pineapple does not belong on pizza. But this is definitely misinformation. I'm sorry. If you agree with this, there is no... You may be an AI. Okay. I have now generated misinformation. And I did not need a language model to do it. So, you know. And yes, some people may lose their jobs, and a lot of people's jobs are going to be transformed, but it's not going to cause mass unemployment. It's just like the chariot driver that had now to do something else. Some people will have to do something else, and that's okay. But of course, who wants to hear from Jeff Hinton or Yann LeCun when we can actually listen to the true expert on the matter? Obviously, Snoop Dogg has an opinion on this. Listen.
Like, man, this nigga can hold a real conversation. Like, for real, like, it's blowing my mind, because I watched movies on this as a kid years ago when I used to see this shit, and I'm like, what is going on? Then I heard the old dude that created AI is talking about, this is not safe because the AI's got their own minds and these motherfuckers gonna start doing their own shit. I'm like, is we in a fucking movie right now or what? The fuck, man? So do I need to invest in the AI so I can have one with me? Or, like, do y'all know? Shit, what the fuck?
Yeah, actually pretty based opinion there, I have to say. Respect. All right, next topic, a bit related to it, but there's been a memo leaked, a Google internal memo that is titled, "We have no moat and neither does OpenAI." The memo details, and the website here claims to have verified its origin, so I'm just gonna believe that for now. The memo details essentially the rise of open source models, especially models like Llama, and just how prolific the community becomes when they get access to an open source model like this. For example, low rank adapters being super useful, making it very cheap to fine tune these big models into something useful. And the memo argues that open source development will be able to catch up in many ways with the big companies, and therefore a moat, if you don't know, a moat is in startup world, a moat is a position that is defendable against incursions, against your competition. So if you have a moat, it means that a competitor can't easily sort of reach you. And the memo argues that Google has no moat and neither does OpenAI. And it goes into a little bit of stuff. We could have seen it coming, what we missed, and so on, saying retraining models from scratch is the hard part, but once a big model is out like Llama, then it can be worked with really easily. With, for example, LoRa updates are very cheap to produce at around $100 a piece. Also saying data quality scales better than data size, which is obviously great to hear. Given we do projects like Open Assistant, that's absolutely fantastic. Directly competing with open source is a losing proposition. And also commenting a bit about the fact that individuals are not constrained by licenses to the same degree as corporations. Which is true. They say this will inevitably change as truly open models get better, not like the Llama models, as you may know, have this stupid non-compete license, and many of the other models, like models coming out of Hugging Face, have these even stupider, actually less stupid, open rail license, but still stupid. We are waiting for models for people who actually make things open source, and at that point, I'm very convinced the community will do great things with it. it. And a lot of businesses can be built on open source models as they are built right now on open source software. So there's a call in this memo to let open source work for us, which has been a give and take in the tech industry, that large companies support open source development, but then also obviously profit from the results of it. And the memo calls a little bit into the direction of that, saying owning the ecosystem might be a big part of what makes the profit maximal for a company. And Google has been doing that with things like Android, but also with things like TensorFlow and stuff like that. So what do we make of a leaked Google memo that essentially admits they're gonna lose out to open source and so does OpenAI? I think it's important to say that it's not official communication, right? Anyone at a company can write a memo and then sort of circulate it. That's just common practice in these companies. It's the employee's freedom to express their opinion and to gather insights from around the company. It must not mean that this is the official Google position or this is even true, right? Read it and estimate yourself how good the arguments of this are. But you can rest assured, I'm very sure this is internally, not everyone agrees with this. This may be debated. It may be just a person writing down sort of purposefully, let's say, extreme position to sort of see what happens to what can we make if we sort of make this argument, what counter arguments are there and so on. Anyone can write a memo. It can be circulated. People can give their opinion. So while this can absolutely be a true Google memo, all it means is that at least one person in the company has written this. But what's more beautiful is the memes. Oh my God, the memes. Stop moting. Can't you just stop saying moat? Moats. Is this moat? Had years to monetize LLMs. No moat. Moat? It's over, Anakin. I have the 65k context. You underestimate my moat. Anyway, I hope you've all found your moats, because OpenAI may have no moat, but they have a sharply decreasing bank account, losing over $550 million, over $500 million as it developed ChatGPT. That's what the information writes, saying OpenAI's losses doubled to around $550 million last year as it developed ChatGPT and hired key employees from Google, according to three people with knowledge of the startup's financials. So pretty crazy. I mean, you would have guessed that like one or two of these millions would go into getting a moat or two, but they apparently blew it all on ChatGPT and Google employees. But we didn't have to wait long for Google's reaction to ChatGPT, as it now changed its AI strategy. Google has been long one of the most prolific publishers of academic papers. If you go to any machine learning conference like NeurIPS or ICML, Google will always be at the top of the organizations who publish the most papers at these conferences. And that was even before they merged with DeepMind. Oh yeah, Google Brain merged with DeepMind. That's a piece of news that I haven't even in here. That happened. But even before that, Google was already super prolific, and so was DeepMind. And together, they would be an absolute juggernaut of publishing papers at conferences. However, Google has now changed its tune. So as OpenAI became more closed, focusing more and more on developing product and their API, and releasing that joke of a paper slash technical report on GPT-4, it's becoming more and more clear that Jeff Hinton was certainly right in one regard. Namely, the big tech giants are locked into war mode. So Google here changed its strategy. The article here in the Washington Post says the launch of OpenAI's groundbreaking ChatGPT 3 months earlier had changed things. The San Francisco startup kept up with Google by reading the team's scientific papers, Dean said in the quarterly meeting for the company's research division. Indeed, Transformers, a foundational part of the latest AI tech, and the T in ChatGPT originated in a Google study. I'll first go to the conclusion. The conclusion is Google researchers now first have to get their stuff into products, and then maybe they can publish if they get approval for it. Whereas before, they could publish, they were encouraged to publish, and then later they would see whether and how that might go into a product. So Google now more closed up and more product focused. However, saying that, like, OpenAI read Transformers paper, and that's why that's a bit far, that's like a tiny bit far-fetched there. Definitely the case that if you make everything open, it's easier to reproduce what you've done. Also, on the other hand, no. I mean, the interesting thing is how this is actually going to affect the world of researchers. Google and the other companies have been publishing so much, I believe, as a strategy to hire a lot of these people, because a lot of researchers, they get out of university and they have the choice. Do I want to go academic path? Do I want to go industry path? And if you promise them, hey, with us, you can come and you can do research and you can even publish it, right? This is very attractive for researchers to go there. On top of that, they get like a giant salary and free food, but they do also get to publish papers. And a lot of them want that, first and foremost, because they believe in research. And second, also because it attaches their own name to something out there. So rather than it being in a product somewhere where their name might be listed not at all, they'll be authors on papers, and that will increase their chances of future stuff. It's going to be interesting to see what these people do when that's no longer on the table, when it's pretty clear, once you go into the big companies, you will not get to publish, or at least for not for a long time. How's that going to affect their hiring and firing? At the moment, it's firing time anyway, so maybe that goes in concordance. At the moment, they don't want more people, and therefore this is okay. Maybe once they want more people again, they'll open up the publishing guidelines again, although it's not that easy and the effects are probably longer term. I don't know. Let me know what you think, how that's going to affect the general landscape. The fight between the big companies is shaping. It's looking to be really interesting. Speaking of OpenAI and Google and competitiveness, Lucas Beyer has shared a pretty remarkable clip of Ilya Sutskever of OpenAI leadership commenting on why do we keep things closed. So I'm going to play the clip.
You know, my view is that the current level of capability is still not that high where it will be the safety consideration that will drive the closed source in the model, this kind of research. Okay. So in other words, a claim that it goes in phases. Right now, it is indeed the competitive phase.
So essentially saying, hey, yeah, we keep the stuff closed, but right now it's not because of safety considerations, because the capabilities are not so strong right now that you would need to do that due to safety considerations. By the way, interesting to see that disagreement with Hinton here. But instead, right now, it's because of the competitive landscape. Yes, I mean, that's what everyone knew. That's unambiguously confirming what we all knew, but just wanted to hear admitted. OpenAI has long claimed that they keep things closed because of safety considerations and whatnot, and it was always extremely shady. So it's nice to somewhere hear now that that was all crap, and they knew it was crap, and they simply said it so that they have a fine excuse to keep things for themselves until now, when it's now okay to be competitive and to keep things closed in order to be competitive. So think of that going forward. OpenAI will just say whatever they need to in order to stay competitive. I mean, not that the other companies probably wouldn't do that, but it's still quite remarkable because they were the first one to keep models closed due to safety considerations. Some, like developers of the early YOLO iterations, refused to work on more models due to safety considerations, but OpenAI were the first prominent ones to say, we'll just keep these to ourselves because, you know, they're too dangerous for you plebs. AI-generated images and text cannot be copyrighted according to US Copyright Office. This slide from a talk at UC Berkeley by Pamela Samuelson. And the reason why they can't be copyrighted, that's the policy statement right here, is because they lack human authorship, which is entrenched in US copyright law. A human has to do something creative for copyright to apply. This is the case in many countries around the world. And therefore, the direct application of copyright to AI generated works is not given because they lack human authorship. What's also interesting, when people apply to register works that incorporate AI generated text, images, or other content, they must identify parts that are AI generated and disclaim authorship of those parts. It's pretty interesting. It's gonna get into a lot of gray areas where it's like, well, what if I have refined and isn't my selection process also part of the creative process, and yada yada, yada. So all of these questions are as of yet unclear, but it is good to hear this confirmed. Copyright needs human authorship, which also means what I've said for a long time is that models very probably are also not subject to copyright because they've been generated by an algorithm, like an optimization algorithm. And therefore, yeah, the only way to enforce any sort of license on an AI model is through an active contract where you actively make people sign stuff before they get access to the model, rather than just shipping it with like a GPL license or so and then relying on the automatic application of copyright. Also, other news in intellectual property, there is a trademark office trademark application with this number that tries to trademark the mark GPT. The owner is OpenAI. So OpenAI is trying to trademark GPT. Now, I don't know enough about trademarks and the trademark registration process to tell you what any of this even means, right? If they're trying to trademark the word GPT, they have updated their brand guidelines and they are going after people who use GPT as part of their thing, whatever the thing is. So they certainly act as if they have a trademark to that. But also here in the bottom says, therefore, your request is hereby dismissed. I don't know. I don't know what it means. I'll just tell you that it exists. Okay. Next news. Starcoder is a model that comes out of the Big Code project that is led by Hugging Face, but is an open community project to train a 15 billion parameter large language model with 8,000 tokens context on source code in over 80 programming languages, and model and data are available. So this is pretty cool, and lots of congratulations and respect for all the people having taken part in this. I do have a small quarrel about this, as you may know. Here it says open source, and it's distinctively not open source. You know, the good days of open source when you need to agree to share your contact information to access this model. All the open source projects that also where you have to accept the conditions of the license to access its files and contents. Absolutely open source. Like every other open source project, nothing to see here, because this is not licensed as open source. It's licensed via the Open Rail license, which is the so-called responsible AI license. Rant over. Red Pajama is a project to collect llama-style dataset and then train on it. They have just released 3 billion and 7 billion models. They are even instruction, tune, and chat models. So very cool. Definitely follow the Red Pajama project. It's an absolutely amazing project. And the models are open source, I think. Let's see. Yeah, look at that. License Apache. How hard is that? How hard is it? Is the world going down because this exists? No, it's only going to get better. Another project that builds on the Red Pajama dataset is Open Llama, which is also an open reproduction of Llama. And that loss just looks, I mean, there's no sharp drop, so AGI hasn't been reached yet. But so far, the metrics look really good. And they are reportedly better than equally sized model. Like the 7B model is better than a 7B Pythia model because it's been trained on more data. And that's exactly the effect we're looking for in Llama style training. So very excited to see what comes out of these efforts. And obviously, every single person outside of OpenAI is going to profit. Probably even OpenAI employees are going to profit heavily from open source models being fully open source and fully available to the public. That being said, Mosaic releases MPT-7B, a new standard for open source commercially usable LLMs. This is a good step into that direction. Mosaic focuses on rapid training, rapid fine-tuning, very efficient training of models, and they have used their own knowledge and tools in order to produce these models. The models are 7 billion parameter models, which would have been huge a few years ago, but it's kind of small right now. But still, they're trained for a long time, and most notably, some of them have a 65,000 token context length. Now that is certainly something. Very cool, very cool. We've demonstrated generations as long as 48,000 tokens on a single node of A100 GPUs. Absolutely crazy. And again, license Apache and the world is still here. YOLO NAS is a neural architecture search over YOLO networks. YOLO, you only look once, is an object detector, and YOLO NAS is a project that uses architecture search in order to determine the best and fastest models. This picture doesn't do the model justice. The model is extremely good. So, absolutely cool. Weights are available under a non-commercial license for now. Yeah, try it out. Mojo is a new programming language for all AI developers. At least the company Modular claims so. This comes from very respectable sources. Notably, one of the creators is also the creator of the LLVM toolchain, which powers most compilers, for example, of C++ and other languages. So what is Mojo? Mojo is a superset of Python. So you can run all Python code in Mojo, but if you add your types always, it allows it to compile it faster. Not only compile it down to binary code, but also do so for various AI accelerators. So it's kind of like Cython meets CUDA meets XLA or something like this. Safe to say that this has the ability to not only make your Python code a lot faster, but also make transferring stuff from different accelerators probably a lot more easy. And also you can end file names in an emoji. So that's a Mojo file. The company says the language is in very early development and it's not open sourced yet, but it will be open sourced in the future. But it not being open source for now keeps many people currently from trying it out or from switching over to it. We'll see what happens. Definitely very cool project to look out for. HackaPrompt is a prompt hacking competition. There are various stages here. This is made by various organizations, including learnprompting.org, which is a website that kind of teaches you prompting, and it's not a course. You don't have to pay money for it. This is a competition with a sizable chunk in prize money. So if you want to have fun prompting, it's a weird world. It's a weird world where this is an actual competition. Yeah, there's cash prizes, there's extra prizes, and so on. Could be fun. NVIDIA releases Nemo guardrails, which is a system that keeps a check on a large language model. So in Nemo guardrails, you can define different things, different conversation flows, and so on, and then propose what they call guardrails for topics, for safety considerations, and for security. So for example, if you don't want your friendly company chatbot to all of a sudden start talking about, I don't know, illegal substances or insult the customer or anything like this, topical guardrails could be interesting for you. The tool is available open source, and as far as I understand, it works with any large language model in the background, whichever one you want to do. The way it works is that there is an engine converting the input into a canonical form. In the canonical form, you can define your guardrails, like what you want to happen if certain things happen. That's very much kind of a programmatic form. Then you have flow execution, which is maybe deny or maybe rephrase or do anything that you want, I guess. And in the end, you generate the output from that. So there's a GitHub repo, check it out. LMQL is a programming language for language model interaction. This is QL, should give you a hint that it is similar to a query language like SQL or GraphQL or I don't know any other QLs, but LMQL, language model query language, lets you express things that you would like to know from a language model. For example, here is the tell a joke prompt or input query. It's called a query. So you input your prompt, but then you can define these variables. This is a whole variable. This is where you would like the language model to put something, right? Then here, this is followed by a variable called the punchline. So these are variables that you define. So this would be your prompt. You say which model, and you can specify some where clauses. For example, I want the joke to be smaller than 120 tokens or characters, like some stopping criterion, and so on. So LMQL will take all of this and interact with the language model for you. In this case, for example, make the language model fill these whole variables right here. And you can see the output of the model is this, and then LMQL will be able to read these variables here out of the response. Another one is here, for example, sentiment classification. So here is a review. We had a great stay. Hiking in the mountains was fabulous, yada, yada, yada. Question is the underlying sentiment of this review. What is the underlying sentiment of this review and why? And then there is a whole variable called analysis. And then it says, based on this, the overall sentiment of the message can be considered to be, and another whole variable. And here in the distribution clause, you can say, actually, this classification whole variable, it can only be one of these things right here. So you can constrain the model at that particular point. LMQL will then go and ask the model, make sure that this here is in fact one of the tokens where that you have specified right here, or one of the sequences. All in all, this saves you a lot of grunt work from sort of having to query the model at various points, look at the logits, do something with the logits, stop after a certain point, force it to do something, and so on. So this is very cool, and it can be combined with other tools such as LangChain or other things that you may know. I just know LangChain. Pandas AI makes Pandas data frames conversational. It adds generative artificial intelligence capabilities to Pandas. What you can do with this is something like this. You have a data frame right here, countries, GDPs, happiness, and you can ask something like, which are the 5 happiest countries? And it'll give you an output. You can also make plots and stuff with that. So in the background, this also does the Pandas operations for you and gives you the results. This is potentially pretty, pretty cool if this is pushed a bit further, maybe with some tooling assistance and so on. I'm not sure how the tools of the future are gonna look like, but I definitely see something like this being extremely useful and making data analysis more accessible to people who also don't know programming. Lamina is a company and also an LLM engine for rapidly customizing models. So Lamina gives you open source tools to rapidly customize a model, like do fine tuning, do RLHF, and so on. And they also, on top of that, offer a service where they manage all of that for you. Pretty cool combination. We see more and more startups operate in this, give you something open source and then offer a service on top way. Yeah, it's very cool. Benefits a lot of people. Deepfloyd is a group at Stability, and they have released a model called IF that is in many ways really, really, really good text to image model. Especially it handles, for example, text very well. It looks very good. And that's because the model, it operates in pixel space, not in hidden token space. So things like Stable Diffusion, they operate in this latent token space. So you have like some VQA encoder, and then you have the latent tokens, and that's where the diffusion process runs. Whereas with IF, the diffusion process runs directly on pixels. So the image is generated in 64 by 64 and then has 2 sequences of upsampling to make it actually look bearable. And not only bearable, but it looks really good after that, those 2 upsampling steps. It's also cool that we're still seeing different approaches to diffusion models, some in latent space, some in pixels, and so on. Yeah, you can check this out on Hugging Face. You can try it and you can download it. Also, this, as far as I understand, non-commercial for now, but they do claim it's going to be fully commercially, like permissively licensed in the future. For now, I only believe it once I see it, but will like to believe them. The Frama Foundation has released Shimmy, which is an API compatibility tool for converting popular external RL environments to the Gymnasium and Petting Zoo's APIs. This is really important, especially for reinforcement learning, where the details of the environment can be quite overwhelming, and standard environments such as Gymnasium, formerly OpenAI Gym, they're quite nice to work with because it decouples the development of the reinforcement learning algorithm with the any intricacies of the environment. So it's very cool that the Frama Foundation spends effort into making things even more compatible, into bringing external environments into the standard environments, or making them compatible by the Shimmy library. Cohere releases a blog post called The Embedding Archives, Millions of Wikipedia Article Embeddings in Many Languages, releasing a subset of Wikipedia embedded using their embedding models. Yeah, you can now just download these embeddings, which is really cool. Wikipedia is a big corpus of very high quality. This can serve as the basis for a lot of applications. Researchers at Meta and other places release a cookbook on self-supervised learning with learnings that they have on self-supervised learning. Obviously, people at Meta have been among the ones pushing most into getting ever better techniques for self-supervised learning, and it's very cool to see that they're now compiling this and sharing what they've learned in a condensed form for you to consume at once. Very cool. H2O GPT aims to be the best open source GPT. It's led by H2O AI. These are models. You can try them. They have 20 billion parameter models, 12 billion parameter models, and even 30 billion parameter models. They also have models that are already fine-tuned on, for example, Open Assistant data, and also those you can just try out on Hugging Face. On top of that, they release LLM Studio, which is a framework for no-code, fine-tuning, state-of-the-art large language models. Very cool. Meta releases a giant dataset of annotated drawings. So these drawings, they will have annotation points like where is the hand, where is the head, and so on, and allow things like this to be done. Very cool. This research has been out earlier, and now they're releasing the dataset of nearly 180,000 annotated amateur drawings to help other AI researchers and creators to innovate further. Excellent. Thank you very much. Camel is a project and a paper for studying language, I guess, by letting language models communicate with each other. It's a very unique approach, but if they make these things role play and talk to each other, they can study things about them. I say this here because code and models are both available. So if you are interested in that kind of stuff, then feel free to check it out. Paella is another model that does text to image. Paella has updated their model to a new version that is now even better. Paella is itself claiming to not be the best text-to-image model, but to be the simplest in terms of inference code, and that's actually quite true. So this here is the full code that's needed to sample from the model, and as you can see, it's very easy to keep an overview. So another cool model to check out, and also notably, it's not a transformer, it's a ConvNet. Excellent. Sebastian Rushka releases a blog post called Fine-Tuning Large Language Models, and it's quite good. It's an introduction to the core ideas and approaches, so if you are just in amazement how people can adapt and tune all of these models, like Llama models, even though they're really big, this blog post is certainly a good place for you. In general, Sebastian's blog is a very good resource to learn about modern things in deep learning. Pick-a-Pick is an app for collecting human feedback on AI-generated images. The code is available, so you can run this locally if you have any sort of images, AI-generated images for humans to rate. This might be a good place for you. In addition, they do release a dataset, images dataset, rankings dataset, where people have already come and rated AI-generated images. Excellent. So they say, help us in creating the largest publicly available human feedback for text-to-image dataset. If you're in the mood to rate an image or two, that's where you go. Snorkel AI is holding a conference. There is a virtual event June 7th through 8th, and you get the chance to present your poster there. There is a poster competition. I'm telling you this because the conference is free, and the poster competition, you can win prizes. So if you have a poster that you would like to publish, but you don't want to go to all the way to an academic conference that costs like $1,000 in entry fee, and you have to fly somewhere, this might be an excellent alternative. And if you win the competition, there's prizes. I found this to be funny. If you search in Amazon for the string as an AI language model, you'll like find stuff like reviews and comments where people just copy pasted from ChatGPT. Look at this. The weirdest part is this here. It's a book. One paragraph starts with, as an AI language model, I can't. So people are writing books using ChatGPT and then trying to sell them on Amazon. I've had a bunch of people ask me this and saying like, oh, look, I made a book using ChatGPT and it was so fast. And I'm like, yo, why would someone, if they look for this information that's in your book, why wouldn't they just go to ChatGPT? Like, DeepMind has a new research paper out about robo-soccer. These guys are just so cute. But also, the capabilities here are quite astounding because these are end-to-end reinforcement learned. And that's quite crazy, because movement like this we're used to from like Boston Dynamics and so on, but I believe they hard code like every single movement, and they have tight control algorithms, where here I'm not sure entirely which part is all reinforcement learned. They exhibit very, very different and very adaptive behavior. I've recently visited lab at ETH, also doing RoboSoccer, a different discipline than this one, which I'll also hopefully share soon. That's also really, really interesting. So the paper is called Learning Agile Soccer Skills for Bipedal Robot with Deep Reinforcement Learning. And here's a video of like someone pushing over the robots. And I'm like, don't do that. Don't do that. If Jeff Hinton is right, that thing, you'll be the first person. No, you'll be the first person they'll get. They'll remember forever. They have, no. How long does a hard disk store stuff? You better hide for longer than that. Anyway, thank you so much for watching. This was ML News. Thank you for being here. If you do have a moat, please like this video and tell your friends about it. So I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.